The Jaguars want taxpayers to help build an amphitheater at Everbank Field. Meanwhile, St. John's County says yes to tax money for schools. And another special session, yes, another one, melts down in Tallahassee. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. And now, subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday roundtable. Also coming up, a look at this month's Taste of Amelia Island celebration, plus a special treat later in the hour. Don't miss our live in-studio performance from the Junco Royals as they prepare for this weekend's Porch Fest in historic Springfield. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday, and that means it's time for the weekly media roundtable. Representing today, Andrew Pantazzi of the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And also with us, A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics.
Good morning.
Guys, great to have you. Plenty of news from the week to discuss. From a St. John's County election voting in new money for schools, to residents complaining about IKEA in their backyard, to a special session getting voted down in Tallahassee, lots to talk about in the news, but we're going to begin with our top story of the week. The Jacksonville Jaguars and Mayor Lenny Curry want to move forward with an ambitious makeover to Everbank Field that includes building an amphitheater next to the stadium and calls for taxpayers to cover half of the $90 million cost. Now, the plan is outlined in a proposed agreement that Curry introduced late Wednesday to the City Council. Not a lot of detail yet. We're just learning about this, but our question to callers right now, we want to know, what do you think of this proposal for an amphitheater to be built at Everbank Field on top of the swimming pools that are already there? And what do you think about taxpayers paying for this, part of it anyway? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. A.G. Gankarski, Shot Khan saying he wants to make the fan experience at Everbank second to none in the NFL. Why do we need an amphitheater to watch football, though, is the question.
Here we go again. 3 years ago, we were here talking about the scoreboards and swimming pools and how they're being financed by the bed tax. $41 million of city money during a time of budget austerity where, you know, city employees haven't gotten pay raises since John Payton was mayor. You've got, like, issues with departmental staffing across the board, not enough police officers, not enough firemen yet. City Council, in its wisdom a few years ago, you know, appropriated the $41 million, and it was not even a close vote. This time, it's $45 million from the city, $45 million from Shad Khan, with Shad Khan's company, American Thunder LLC, managing the amphitheater.
Great name for our company, by the way.
Tim Gibbons, jumping onto the round table a few minutes late.
Tim Gibbons,
I'm going to just have to scold you just a tad there. Okay, what are your thoughts as a business editor about this?
Obviously, it is something that would enhance the fan experience, but is it worth $45 million of taxpayer money is the question yet to be answered. It does definitely put paid to the idea of, you know, Shad Khan might abandon Jacksonville sort of thing. Putting $45 million of his own money into this project is different than a lot of these stadium sort of deals where they're asking for all public money.
Well, I will say what strikes me as interesting here is it doesn't even sound like he's so much pointing to the Jaguars with a threat as he is to Florida, Georgia, which I think the city has, you know, perhaps even more emotional ties to because of how long that it's been here. But I mean, he pointed out that getting the amphitheater will help secure Florida, Georgia here in years to come, which may like be his way of saying this isn't just about me. This isn't just about the Jaguars. This is about all the events we host here, especially in light of losing Superfest recently.
Well, I know AG's written some about the amphitheater fight with Metro Park and the noise thing. I'm curious what your thoughts are on do we need another amphitheater, you know, next year?
That's a good question. Now, there is an amphitheater right across the street. You can make the argument it's not the greatest amphitheater.
We like amphitheatering so much, we're going to put an amphitheater on the amphitheater.
Yeah. What about that argument?
Well, you know, when you have the amphitheater discussion, you have to look at noise issues. You have to look at things like that. But, I mean, I want to go back to what the Curry administration's transition plan was. The big discussion was we need a convention center to drive downtown business. The convention, Prime Osborne just isn't doing it. We need something more centrally located, et cetera. This thing just comes out of nowhere. You know, nobody talked about an amphitheater during the transition meetings. Nobody talked about during, you know, the capital improvement plan. Nobody talked about during the budget hearings in August or, you know, September during the floor meeting. This is all of a sudden dropped in. And if you're talking about a $45 million capital investment, you know, dropping it in while the mayor is in Oklahoma City on an economic development trip, you know, it raises questions as to why the urgency that...
And the mayor, Andrew, coming in four square behind this, he's saying this is something he's pushing with the council.
Yeah, and I mean, something to pay attention to that always comes up with this debate is the Florida state legislature limits where tax dollars can be spent. And with that, it limits where bed tax dollars can be spent. So if you are using bed tax, that is people who go to hotels and pay taxes to stay in your city, then you can only use them on certain things. You can't use them on your operating costs like the library or the police and the firefighters. And so instead, you have to use them on things like this. And the question is that smart? Is it smart to keep
Don't we have a Duval legislative delegation that, if they were so inclined, could go to Tallahassee and actually introduce legislation to broaden what bed tax funds can be used for? I mean, look at downtown. We've closed the Day Resource Center for the Homeless. You know, the legislation, if we're written a bit more creatively, would
Let me ask you this. Do you see the city council falling in line? Do you see them standing up to
They will fall in line like they always do.
You don't think they will push back on this?
No, they talk a good game about fiscal rectitude, but when it comes down to it, they want that Shad Khan money.
Well tell me. A certain amount of the, I mean, the shipyards in an interesting way has kind of fallen out of the conversation. I'm not saying that it's gone, but, you know, there was that big burst of energy about it, and, you know, now you have the cleanup. That's going to take a while. So I think there's a certain amount of the political will to spend this sort of money for a big Shad Khan project. That political will is there. It was going to be directed to the shipyards. It just gets redirected
Voodoo
to the
economics.
There's also the fact that if
Voodoo economics, quoting the first President Bush on this one.
Yeah, exactly, because... You know, the financing is wacky. It's basically short-term borrowing. It's basically banking fund borrowing.
Which is the interesting thing, because that was the thing that in the Curry administration came in, and I don't think the radio is the place to get into a banking fund in-depth discussion, but...
Why not?
I know Melissa looks fascinated by the idea, but the idea that, you know, this is where they would turn to for this borrowing is somewhat
exactly what they lambasted Alvin Brown for.
Exactly.
Well, let's have that discussion. Is this hypocritical of this administration and these council members to then turn around and do something that they were highly critical of during the previous mayoral administration?
No, nobody here is cynical, but I mean...
of course not. Never.
It is possible that a new administration or new council people come in and lambast the previous people and then turn around and do the exact same thing, because there's a reason the previous administration did stuff like this.
And that reason is you're telling people, hey, you don't have to pay for this. It's people visiting town who are paying for this. It's not your tax dollars. So we're going to give you this free big thing that'll keep events coming here. And that's a pretty easy political sell.
What events, though? We're the fifth biggest market for concerts in Florida. We get passed over by Orlando, by Tampa, by Miami, with every major act. We get Foreigner and Night Ranger and Color Me Bad and these retread acts with like one original member and three androids.
Wait a second. Are you blasting Foreigner right now?
I'm blasting our approach to concert promotion over the decades. I mean,
that's because we need a new amphitheater.
Well, the amphitheater isn't going to cut it, because these acts are still not going to come here. We're still going to have the same retro retread acts that we've had, you know, since time immemorial.
AG, if I can make a couple suggestions for you, check out the Ritz Theater. They have some amazing acts that come in to the Ritz Theater, or check out Porch Fest this weekend.
By the way, the Junco Royals will be performing live on this program very soon. Keep listening. In the meantime, we're going to go to your calls. By the way, the lines are jammed on this topic. It is the big talker this morning. John is on the South Side. Hello, John. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Melissa, and thank you for taking my call. I think you're going to see a whole bunch of texting going on at this next city council meeting.
That's banned now, remember? That's not kosher.
Well, but hey, we're making it softer. I attended the recent November 2nd Jacksonville Ethics Commission meeting, and just reading right from the agenda, You had the discussion of public records issues and proposed proposed legislation. So we're going to be taking out jail time for any infraction. But here's the next agenda item: discussion of Jaguar football ticket distribution.
Now there. Where are you on the amphitheater? That's what we need to know.
Where I am is that, you know, all this really needs to be done, you know, in the public and not. You know, Carla brought up, you know, the issue of council members on Khan's yacht, and there's going to have to be a settlement with that before you really get to this legislation.
Okay. Thanks, John. Yeah.
Anywhere.
Thank you, John. Janet in Mandarin. Go ahead, Janet. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call, and congratulations for guest hosting on Diane Rehm in December.
Oh, thank you.
Very good news. My comment is that I would like to see the decision be highly influenced by financial business modeling done by an independent entity that would show that the taxpayers would come out ahead by funding the amphitheater. I think that would help us to focus on the bottom line as it benefits Jacksonville and our citizens.
Thanks, Janet. Tim?
The interesting thing is most of the time when you look at these, any sort of stadium public event sort of thing, the economics really aren't there. I mean, they're really expensive, and it's taxpayer money that at least theoretically could be used for something else, whether by the government or by the taxpayers themselves. The economics often don't support it. You do get into an intangible sort of thing, though. You know, say, hypothetically, the Jaguars left or weren't here or whatever. Jacksonville obviously would be a different status, different tier as a city. Economically, is it worth it? No, maybe not on paper, but is there a stature reason to have it? Yeah, that's an argument.
Aaron tweets the show, I think the Jags should start winning to improve the fan experience. Why should we give a bunch of losers more improvement dollars? Sandy tweets the show, we don't need an improved stadium. We need an improved team. Damon on Twitter, Khan should build it with his own money. No more corporate welfare.
Maybe we could tie the funding to their win-loss record.
Ashley, need for an amphitheater. What about Metropolitan Park? We would have two, and lots of emails as well. Scott emails the show, no. It's about time Mr. Khan put up his own money. I just saw his billion-dollar yacht. He has plenty of his own money to do this. And here's an email from Robert. How can the city council take this seriously when I'm buying half the items needed for my children's classrooms?
Boom.
All right, let's go to Kurt in Orange Park. Hi, Kurt. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you today?
Well, thanks. Go ahead.
Well, my word of caution is that Mr. Khan needs to do a good job of explaining the economics of this, because it seems to me that he's attempting to get public funds put in his own pocket. His own company is going to manage it. He's putting in half the money. The revenues from this don't seem to be going back to the city. Some of it's being set aside, at least from what I read in the paper this morning, some of it being set aside to upkeep and maintenance on the facility, but I don't see any of it going back into the taxpayers' pocket to pay back for our half of the facility. So I'm an economist, and I'm always leery when private enterprise proposes to put public money in their own pocket.
Thank you, Kurt. Andrew Pantazzi.
Yeah, I would say that sounds like a fair assessment of the reading, which is he is asking the city to pay money for something that he would like at the stadium, and that he would like to then operate and manage. And he says he ties this to saying it'll help downtown revitalization. We've seen how much the stadium has helped the east side of Jacksonville,
yeah.
Which is probably the poorest neighborhood in the city, and it has not had much revitalization since the stadium.
And Richard tweets the show, IKEA on the south side, $45 million to the Jags, drive-bys on the north side. So explain to me, how is Mayor Curry different from Mayor Brown?
Well, you know, this is kind of the question that keeps coming up. I was in a meeting with Reggie Brown the other day, District 10 Councilman, Northwest Jacks, and he was talking about how there are people in his district who have been waiting for sidewalks since consolidation. And time again, there's always an excuse why this can't happen. You know, you go over to that part of town and you see, you know, infrastructure from the 60s has not been renewed. So we look at something like an amphitheater and we're like, well, where are our city's priorities? And, you know, I want to go back to that first caller way back when, because he's talking about, you know, city council being, you know, comped into Shad Khan's owner's box during Jaguar games before the ethics office came down on it. You had Mayor Curry, you had Kerry Stewart at a party on Shad Khan's yacht that was valued somehow at $63 a person to party on the Kismet by the ethics, you know, office. So you've got those questions coming in too. It's like, how many of these negotiations have actually happened in the sunshine? This is something the finance committee needs to actually get on. John Crescenbenny, you know, he's, you know, obviously, you know, a fiscal watchdog on issues like this. And, you know,
I think that's him on your phone right now.
No,
AG's cell phone just started vibrating.
It's actually a different council person. but my point is that, you know, people really need to ask the questions, the hard questions, you know, come to public comment, come to the finance committee meetings and actually make them make the business case.
Tim, here's an email from Jeff. Khan needs to guarantee the city a profit sharing relationship on his eventual sale of the team. That is how George W. Bush made millions, by buying into the Texas Rangers dirt cheap and then convincing taxpayers to build a new stadium, drastically increasing the value of the franchise. I suspect this is Khan's long-term plan, because it's too bad the team is so bad. He'll have to get taxpayers to pitch in for better draft picks.
And if the city council starts paying for, you know, our next quarterback, that will be an interesting discussion, you know, here on First Coast Connect. But I want to go back to that transparency thing. Not to put too much into the timing, but the way that this, you know, came out, the way that it was actually timed is interesting. A bill being filed on a project of this magnitude with no public discussion
while
not
the
in
city
town.
Officials are in Oklahoma
right.
City,
which is, you know, go back to Shad Khan's rollout of the shipyards project. Go back to any large scale project and think of how it is presented. The fact that this is something that, you know, we're sitting there reading through a 27 page bill, you know, to pull out the details. I mean, that's what we do. I'm not complaining about it, but there's a certain amount of, you know, I want to see a rendering. I want to see, you know, a pro forma. I want to see something that has more detail than a, you know, just legislative, here's a thing.
It will be interesting to see, though, if there is any mobilized opposition in the council, you know, chambers. I really don't know if that will occur.
Yeah, we didn't see it, you know, a few years ago. We saw pretty much all of the incumbents were running again, voting for the thing. I think Stephen Yost was one of the few people against it, and he was obviously termed out. But, you know, let's go back to the corporate welfare aspect. You know, we were talking about Tallahassee a little bit ago. You know, Tallahassee is actually, you know, drawing a line in the sand about these, like, corporate set-asides for billionaire sports team owners. You know, all of them come hat in hand wanting money for this, that, and the other, stadium improvement here and there. So you can kind of see Shad Khan, you know, recalibrating, looking at the city level, and basically, you know, you've got a mayor who, you know, wanted the support during the general election, didn't get it. And, you know, now, you know, the mayor is actually his PAC, building something that lasts, is getting contributions from the Jacksonville Jaguars. That happened in October, right around the time that Kelly Flanagan, the CFO of the Jaguars, got put up to the JEA board. You know, these are things that people paying attention are noticing.
And the JEA board has an interesting relationship with the mayor's office right now.
And we do need to move on and discuss the other headlines from the week. If you're just tuning in, the number to join the show is 549-2937. Now, speaking of votes, on Tuesday night, voters in St. Johns County said yes to a half-cent sales tax increase to pay for education. We took an email a minute ago from a listener saying that there just isn't enough money for his child's school. Well, that has been an issue in St. Johns County. They're bursting at the seams with people moving to the county because of the good schools. And there was just not enough revenue to pay for all the school construction needed. So by a 60% margin, St. John's approved the tax hike. It will raise hundreds of millions over the next decade and pay for new schools, up to 20 new schools slated for this rapidly growing area, and improvements to existing buildings. Andrew Pantazzi, a Republican county, the first tax referendum to pass, I'm told, in something like 40 years. Pretty incredible.
What's also incredible is the amount that this passed by. This is 61% of the vote, which shows just how important education is whenever there's an election coming up, it's easy to forget that. I mean, education is the issue that most people care about. And so we talked earlier, AG mm-hmm. mentioned Tallahassee earlier with limiting how tax money can be spent and limiting the types of ways to fund things. So the Tallahassee limited what's called the allowable capital outlay millage, which I'm sure Tim can do a much better job of explaining than I can. But basically, it's about how a county handles its growth. And Tallahassee limited the amount of taxes you can use on that. So St. John's County said, we're going to find another way to make up the difference. And they're doing that through a sales tax, which the voters, I mean, 61% of them heartily agreed with.
That really is the stunning number there. It plays into Duval County. I think sometimes when we talk about, you know, oh, we're low taxes and taxes can't be raised and every mayor, you know, pledges not to raise taxes. People aren't dumb. I mean, nobody wants to pay more taxes, but people want nice things. The story of St. John's County is people moving there for education.
Absolutely.
You know, companies come to town. That's where recruiters take them. Hey, CEO, move to St. John's County. You go to the schools there. It's great for the First Coast, not so good for Duval County.
That's right.
And people basically are willing to say, yeah, this is why we moved here for the education. We have to pay for it.
Philip is in Northern St. John's. Hi, Philip. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, I live in Northern St. John's, and my child has special needs, and I definitely appreciate St. John's having more money. I just wish that the way they had went about it would have went to Tallahassee and have the millage for schools go up, rather than this half-cent sales tax, because eventually the millage will go up. It's just a matter of time. In fact, they brought the millage down during the recession. So when the economy comes back, the millage will come back. Mm-hmm. But what won't go away is that 5-cent sales tax, even after they have the money they need. Now, I voted for the 5-cent sales tax because I know we need that money now. I just don't trust the government, the local government, to eradicate that 5-cent sales tax when my millage does go up. I know that St. John's County grows, and with that growth and a higher millage, they would have plenty of money. So anyway, that's all I got.
Thanks, Philip. Here's a tweet about that from Ben. St. John's voted for Rick Scott, but then they realized the message from the governor's office is, you're on your own. And he's referring to the state basically prohibiting a millage rate increase that could have been an option for St. John's County, but wasn't. AG.
Well, you know, it's all about local control with, you know, Republicans. And, you know, they would counter, well, yeah, we're making the decision as a county. And it's important to look at the politics of how this actually was passed. You know, they had a strong information campaign, a lot of a great field team knocking on doors, you know, building consensus, stacking it up in St. Augustine, the beaches, you know, those areas down there, and basically overwhelming resistance in the Tea Party rural areas of the state. And they spent a lot of money on the campaign, and you can say, yeah, it's a regressive tax, and it's a half-cent tax, not a 5-cent tax like the caller said, so I'm cutting his taxes by 90%. But, you know, realistically, that's how it's done. You know, if you've got a state government that's more laissez-faire in these things, then it's incumbent on county and city officials to make these moves.
And this is something local governments, I mean, constantly go up against Tallahassee with. The Republican legislature and the Republican governor's office is very keen on telling local governments they can't raise their taxes. In Jacksonville, it affects us with UF Health. Mm-hmm. Because we're a consolidated government, the state of Florida doesn't allow us to have a medical tax that would help fund UF Health. And it's the same thing going across these. But I think you're right about the information here. The difference with this sales tax is it was tied directly to schools. Mm-hmm. I think we may see a different type of campaign when there's a proposal for a sales tax referendum to pay for the pension debt. I mean, like, there, people are less motivated to say, I'll pay down debt with sales tax. Whereas if you're saying, we need to keep the schools good or else, you know, your child won't get as good of an education, people are going to come out in force to vote for that.
It's the Better Jacksonville plan. I mean, the idea that people are
exactly.
people are willing to pay, particularly a sales tax, which in a way it's regressive, but it also does hit everyone, not just property owners. And you can make the argument it hits people passing through, people who work, who live in other counties.
And that argument was made successfully.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's talk of a better Jacksonville plan too, but pension is the hard push there because nobody wants to tax themselves to pay you.
We need to make mention of another headline from the week. People on Jacksonville's south side saying, not in my backyard, that old refrain, to news that IKEA, the Swedish superstore, wants to build a huge new facility at I-295 and Gate Parkway. My 13-year-old is very excited about this, by the way, because she needs some new bedroom furniture. Just throwing that out there. Residents turned out last night for a town hall meeting to hear about the project and raise concerns, particularly about how it might impact the area when it comes to increased traffic. IKEA reassuring folks that most of the traffic will be on the weekends. But this is not going down well with everyone. Contrary to the first glowing reports and excitement about IKEA coming into this area.
This is my, I don't know, pet theory on Jacksonville development, which is there is a group of people who are two very well-intentioned groups of people, one of who looks at things like IKEA coming and says, this is great, we're moving to a different tier, and one that says, it's going to mess up traffic and it's going to have more people coming through our neighborhoods and the roads are going to have to be repaired quicker. And they see all of the true and real problems, and for them, that trade-off isn't worth it. It's a valid position.
This is where repurposing space comes in handy. We've talked so much about Regency Mall and what to do with that blight zone there. Regency Mall would have been perfect for IKEA. They had the space. They don't have the occupancy. They have the roads. They have the infrastructure. They don't have the traffic issues.
It's impossible to get to, though.
Yeah.
IKEA's looking for that highway
visibility. It's impossible
to
get to. I mean, you've got Arlington Expressway. You've got Southside Boulevard. You've got 295.
You've got the magic.
But they want people near a major interstate that are coming from other cities.
They want new development. That's what they want.
Yeah.
Get real.
And that as well.
Yeah. It's basically developing new stuff and, letting...
But think about it. When you go to other cities, you always see an IKEA near a major interstate because they know people will travel from other cities.
That's how the business model doesn't work if you're in urban infill. Now, that isn't to say that urban infill shouldn't be done, but dropping IKEA, right off the Matthews Bridge, Arlington Expressway sort of area just isn't going to work for what they do.
I mean, they want it right off 95.
Well,
they want
if it's
to get
a destination,
people driving
they're come.
Down from
yeah, but
Savannah.
Tim, can you explain a little more as to why their model doesn't work if IKEA is in Regency?
Because it's not. They make their money, obviously, from two groups of people. People who live here, people who are coming in from other areas. And the idea of, yes, they would draw some people to Arlington coming from Orlando, say, but they wouldn't get the person driving from Atlanta to Orlando who sees IKEA from the highway and says, hey, I'm going to stop there and get some lingonberries.
I mean, this is a company that famously said, we won't move to a city of less than 2 million people. Now they're backtracking and saying, we're going to move to Jacksonville because there are strategic reasons for this. I think one of those reasons is we're close to the University of Florida, so you can get college students from there. You get people from Savannah and throughout South Georgia who are willing to drive. But you're less willing to drive to go to Regency. I think if it's right off 95 and it's convenient, then it's easier. Also, if you're driving down further south, say you're going to Daytona Beach.
Or you're going to the town
now,
center.
Let me just add that the planned IKEA location is going to be off 295 south of Butler. FDOT is going to widen those lanes by building toll lanes, by the way. So not only will there be more traffic in that area, which is upsetting the folks in the Hampton Glen subdivision, these lanes will be tolled. Just FYI.
But you don't have to use the toll lanes.
No, you do not.
Toll and free lanes.
That's right.
I mean, realistically, they're going back to Andrew's point, them breaking their 2,000 or 2 million people pledge. IKEA's brand is maturing. It's losing its novelty. They're having to be less selective. And, looking at what Tim's point is regarding the urban infill, perhaps they want to look at something different. Perhaps they want to experiment with the model because, 295 is not directly through Jacksonville either. It's still a beltway. And, 295 is not too far from Regency Mall if we're looking at it that way. It's not right off the interstate, but, you've got, space there with parking, with a lot of issues solved.
Unlike Melissa's child, mine is not excited about the idea because I haven't gotten lost in IKEA once. So maybe a small scale one would make him happier.
Well, you know what's making me happy? The fact that we had an election in Florida Tuesday night. And you know what that means.
That means a great transition by you. That was really
exactly. Yeah. It gives me material for what's about to happen right now. Our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week around the state. Luckily, there is never a shortage shortage of material. So here it is for you right now, only in Florida, the election edition. And this week, there's only one story because it's so good, there's nothing that can top it. Now, only in Florida are local elections decided by a game of rock, paper, scissors. Well, not exactly, but it was close. Really, really close. Now, you know, here in Florida, we sometimes have very interesting elections, right? Well, you won't believe this one. Tuesday night, the town of Bradenton Beach, population 1,482, had a mayoral election. After a recount, both incumbent Mayor Jack Clark and challenger Bill Sheeran were left with exactly 195 votes apiece. A dead tie.
That's a pretty low turnout.
This left Manatee County Supervisor of Elections Mike Bennett scratching his head. Both state and local charters specify that in the case of a tie, it will be settled by drawing for lots. But the law doesn't define what those lots are. Mm. So, after discussing rolling dice, flipping a coin, drawing stones, and yes, even a game of rock, paper, scissors, that was discussed, it was decided that splitting cards was the fairest way to settle this, so Bennett drove to Walgreens to pick up a $4 playing deck. In the final showdown, which witnesses say looked like a pair of senior citizens beginning an unusually tense game of cribbage, incumbent Mayor Clark drew first and pulled the 10 of clubs. Mm. But unfortunately for Clark, Sheeran pulled an ace.
Oh.
And in turn, he became the city's mayor by the luck of the draw.
Okay,
literally.
This happened.
This is real.
This is election fraud because an ace stands for a one and a 10 is higher than a one. And I'm going to say that the 10 of clubs wins.
Well, I'm taking a controversial position there on ace high.
Yeah. I'm just saying the ace is low.
The loser
ace is bottom.
The loser is
top.
Moving 75 miles away to be mayor there. So it's going to be a win-win situation.
That was the little coda that I didn't add. But this did occur. It is an actual story. You can look it up. And thanks, Tim Gibbons, Andrew Pantazzi, and A.G. Gankarski. Guys, have a great weekend.
You too.
Thank you.
Much more still to come, including a live in-studio performance from the Junco Royals, a preview of this weekend's Porch Fest. Stay with us. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Candidate Bernie Sanders, there was Larry Sanders.
His vision was, I don't really want to do this, but if somebody else doesn't come into it who can do the job, I will do it.
Not the old Larry Sanders show, but Bernie's real live older brother Larry. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sweeping changes could be in store for Duval Public Schools. School zone boundary shifts, school uniforms, and underperforming schools being converted into special academies. WJCT's Community Thread invites the community to join in one big conversation with Duval County Superintendent Nikolai Vitti. Log on to wjct.org/communitythread to submit your questions or RSVP to be a part of our studio audience on November 12th.
Listeners love Relax Radio.
Hi, I'm Evan Willman. I typically listen to the station when I'm in my my home office. I work out of my house a lot. I have my HD radio in there. So this is really the best of all worlds. It gives me my news. It gives me music that constantly delights and surprises me.
When you make a $120 gift to WJCT, you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information.
Welcome back. Well, mark your calendar for one of Amelia Island's tastiest events of the season. The 24th annual Taste of Amelia Island is coming up next Friday at the Omni Amelia Island Plantation. Gail Schultz, Executive Director of the Nassau County Volunteer Center, is on the line now with a preview. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you with us. And this benefits the center. Tell us what's going to be happening. This is such a mainstay event on the island.
Yes, well, it is. It's the 24th annual Taste of Amelia, and it is at the Omni Ballroom. And we expect between 400 and 500 people, but we can always ask for more. And we have a number of very fine restaurants from Amelia Island. We have a band, Silent Auction, and live auction. Any other things?
Sure. And it's called Taste of Amelia Island, so people obviously come out for the great food. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we have all kinds of food. We have everything from like the mancha with our Spanish, and we have the Mexican. We have the Horizons, an excellent restaurant. We have probably between 10 and 15 restaurants, hopefully.
And this all benefits, of course, the Nassau County Volunteer Center, which is a wonderful organization. Share a little bit with us about the mission of the center.
Well, we are actually a clearinghouse for volunteerism in the county. We recruit and refer volunteers to any nonprofits within the county. We do food drives. We are following upon the taste, right after the Taste of Amelia, we have what we call an adopt-a-family, where we get donors to adopt families that are given to us by the agencies for the holidays. That is one of ours. We have another fundraiser that we just, not a fundraiser, benefit that we just did, a PB&J, peanut butter and jelly drive with the Girl Scouts, and that goes to the different agencies. We have a huge volunteer awards luncheon in April where we honor volunteers throughout the county, and we have several different areas that give volunteer awards. And meanwhile, we do recruit and refer volunteers constantly. Last year, we recruited over 3,000 for the year. So we are the place to go for volunteerism. If you want to volunteer, you can come on our website, volunteernassau.org, or you can call us at 904-261-9416. We're located in Bernardine Beach.
VolunteerNassau.org. And again, this event is next Friday at the Omni. And when people come out, you do want them to bring a non-perishable food item.
Yes, we do.
Right?
Yeah, and that is, they'll be eligible for a prize, you know, in the raffle. And that food will be integrated with our Adoptive Food Family Program.
Gail Schultz is Executive Director of the Nassau County Volunteer Center. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Sure. And it's the 24th annual Taste of Amelia Island next Friday night at the Omni Amelia Island Plantation. Get your tickets now at volunteernassau.org. And in a moment, don't miss the live in-studio performance from the Junco Royals, a preview of Saturday's Porch Fest.
On the next Jazz Night in America, something undeniably epic. We're in downtown Los Angeles, and Los Angeles native Kamasi Washington debuts a 30-piece ensemble. Strings, choir, a double rhythm section. I'm Christian McBride. That's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Looking for fresh music? Join us weeknights at 7 for After Hours. You'll hear everything from jazz to electronica, only on 89.9 FM After Hours.
WJCT and Vistar Credit Union present the 13th annual Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used men, women, and children's sweaters, jackets, socks, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped at WJCT and all Vistar Credit Union locations and Two Men in a Truck at 8849 Arlington Expressway. For more information, log on to WJCT.org. Contributions will be donated to selected nonprofit facilities within the First Coast area.
You do need to get up to... Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, something special is happening tomorrow in downtown Jacksonville when live music, food, and fun take over the porches of historic Springfield. Saturday marks the second year of a free festival known as Porch Fest. Now, the big attraction is local musicians performing on the porches of those gorgeous historic Springfield homes. The inaugural event last year was a huge success, with more than 4,000 people filling the streets of Springfield in a first-of-its-kind of event for the city. We have a preview right now, a special treat, as one of the bands that will be performing Saturday, Junco Royals, joins us now in studio. Hey, guys, good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
And also with us, Christina Parrish, Executive Director of the Springfield Preservation and Revitalization Council and a founder of Porch Fest. Hey, Christina.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks so much for having us.
It's great to have you. I can't wait to hear the music. But first, Christina, you came up with this idea, and what a genius idea it is, really is. How'd you come up with it?
Well, we can't really take credit for coming up with the idea. Porch Fest have been done around the country for many years, and we took that idea of doing a Porch Fest and brought it to Springfield because of our fabulous front porches. It seemed like a really good fit for the neighborhood.
The homes in Springfield are renowned. There are around 100 years old, a lot of them. Gorgeous, historic, and preserved homes. Of course, you lead the SPAR, the Springfield Preservation and Revitalization Council. This is a way to show off the homes and show off all the local musical talent of this area all at the same time.
Exactly. It brings people in to see the architecture, and it also gives us a chance to employ musicians. We pay every musician who performs at Porch Fest, even though it's a free event, and we're able to do that thanks to our many generous sponsors.
Lots of sponsors. A lot is going to be happening tomorrow. In addition to the music, there's a lot to see and take in. Tell us a little bit about everything that's on tap.
This year, we have increased the number of food trucks that will be with us. We have at least 15 food trucks and dozens of other vendors. Vagabond Market is going to be in Clutho Park with a vintage market selling all kinds of good items, so you can do some early Christmas shopping if you'd like to. We will also have a beer garden in Clutho Park this year. And the vendors and the food trucks start at noon. The bands will be on porches from 1 to 5. And then we have something that actually is the most exciting part of Porch Fest this year. We've partnered with the Ritz Theater in La Villa to bring a band from New Orleans called Flow Tribe to play in Clutho Park. They've got Grandpa's Cough Medicine opening for them. And then Hadley Parrish Cotton and Bobby Goen, who are playing with Junco Royals this morning, will be the first act that's on stage. So people need to come back to Clutho about 5 o'clock to hear the three bands that'll be performing until 8:30.
That's fantastic. And bringing La Villa into this, which is adjacent, and the history of La Villa, once known as the Harlem of the South, that really kind of joins the two neighborhoods together.
Exactly. And that idea came from a good friend of mine, Pete Stitz, who has worked at festivals all over the Southeast. He helped me with Porch Fest last year, and he knew the folks at SMG and the Ritz. And after Porch Fest, he thought, what a great partnership that would be to merge Springfield and La Villa and our histories.
Wonderful. Well, as you said, a lot of bands performing on neighborhood porches Saturday at Porch Fest. Everyone needs to come out, walk around, take it all in. We have a special treat, a preview right now, as the Junco Royals perform live some traditional old-time New Orleans jazz. What are we going to be hearing? What's the song?
I Get the Blues.
This is the Junco Royals with I Get the Blues.
One, two, three.
Now listen here, sweet baby. Please listen to me. I know that your loving is the best I ever seen. And I get the blues deep down my heart, sweet baby, 'cause your loving is so soft and warm.
Performing at Porch Fest tomorrow in Springfield, and we're getting calls. Everybody wants to know when the festivities kick off, Christina. 1 o'clock, right?
Music starts at 1, but we'll start with food trucks and vendors at 12 noon. Maps are available of the entire route at 3rd and Laura Streets, 3rd and Silver Street next to Clutho Park. So come to Clutho Park at 12, pick up a map, and then wander around Springfield until 5. Hearing the local bands, come back to Clutho at 5 for the evening performance.
So exciting. It's Porch Fest tomorrow in Springfield, and we're going to close with a little more music from Jacksonville's own Junco Royals, some traditional New Orleans jazz. Christina Parrish, you are such a treasure. Thanks for putting this all together. And band, you guys are great. Thanks for bringing all this equipment in here to perform live. We're going to close with more of the Junco Royals. Diane Reams up next with a look at the week's top national news stories. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Get out and enjoy the weekend, and right now, enjoy the Junco Royals with a little more live music.
Oh, my girl had gone. When I woke up this morning, she really had done me wrong. Well, I know it's not fair. A good gal had done caught her. She's been trifling around. Well, about week I know. Yes, sir. love my friends. She's told me so and so. She's found a new man that I can understand. I'm going away, leaving today. I'm gonna bring my baby back. If that eight-wheel driver run her off the railroad track, I take her from that man. I'm gonna bring her home if I can.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.